You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Now, I love Fridays. Why do I love Fridays? Just so I can work tomorrow. But no, it's a Friday. It's always the, I always think it's the best day of the week, I think. Tim, don't you? Tim thinks it's the best day of the week too. Because it's tomorrow is Saturday, you see, so we can destroy the brain cells tonight, have a good time, get over the hard week, and then tomorrow we can let loose again, and Sunday we can repent for our sins and get ready for work, just to repeat the following weekend. Okay, a lot of news happening right now. News.com.au, which is an atrocious newspaper, inverted commas. But a lot of bad things happening around on the housing front. Another one has just gone under. Pivotal Homes has gone under on the in Queensland, on the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast. A lot of big companies going under at the moment. And they say that they had a boom, but made no profit along with most other building companies. So no idea what the government's going to do. I think it's going to be a pretty scary time coming up. And I think Prime Minister Albanese is going to have his hands full, to say the least. Plus, we see that the price of power or electricity, energy, whatever you want to call it, is going to go up. And that's not accounting for the wish to do everything via renewables. Windmills, solar panels, in Albanese's case, lunar panels, the whole works. It's just, I think we're in for a rough trot. Also reading that there could be a food shortage in Australia, just around the corner, in fact, with veggies and fruit. And that's also partly due to the high cost of fuel, which is just going up and up and up. So it's just a terrible time for Australia. Overseas, also terrible too. Thinking of those poor kiddies that were killed and the teachers by that insane, that psychopath, that just mad, bad young man. Got to wonder though, what set him off? Why wasn't he dealt with earlier? Headlines, Texas cops did nothing to stop school shooter, according to parents. Law enforcement officials in Uvalde in Texas refused to comment on Thursday on why police officers did not enter an elementary school to kill a mass shooter for an hour. Parents, distressed parents, accused both local and federal police of doing nothing to end the carnage and of handcuffing those parents that tried to intervene themselves. And I think it's a terrible, terrible state of affairs. And I think guns, actually the gun isn't the evil person thing. It's the person that shoots the gun. And what do you do in Australia? I mean, we have law enforcement have guns, military have guns, farmers have guns, and maybe a few others, but generally the population is not armed, can't buy a gun, which means that bad people have guns. In the US, it's the Second Amendment, and it's a very emotional amendment too, as with most of them. The Americans take great pride in being able to buy a weapon basically of their choice. So I don't know what Joe Biden's going to do. I would think he can't do much.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The World Health Organization, WHO, which probably should apply to them, Tedros should just disappear along with his other cronies, his crooked cronies. They're discussing a possible global pandemic treaty in the upcoming 75th World Health Assembly in Geneva, Switzerland. And that's on, actually at the moment, ends on the 28th of May. Now, there is a lot of concern about the recommendations that have been put forward. What we can be sure of is, one, the people we have in government are not the right people to reject an assault on our sovereign and individual rights. And two, it'll be very, very expensive for taxpayers. Three, the WHO and the same people who managed the last pandemic will create an even greater disaster than the last one and the one before. They're just terrible, absolutely terrible. Now, George Christensen has had a life a great life in conservative politics and is a well-known defender of our sovereignty and democratic way of life. He also shops at my supermarket sometimes when he's on the Gold Coast. We shop in the same aisle. Many things in common. Probably the cereal that's there. He joins us today to look forward and perhaps provide his insights on how we can defend ourselves against this crazy one-world government, which I would imagine George Albanese is going to embrace wholeheartedly, isn't he?
Well, absolutely. It's certainly more of a Labor tendency to push for centralised government, including global governance. And that's exactly what this World Health Organization pandemic treaty is all about. It's all about more global governance. And if you thought things being run out of one little corner of the state were bad when it came to a pandemic, mm-hmm. they certainly were bad. Think about how it's going to be coming from Geneva. They will have absolutely no care about human rights, freedoms, or democratic traditions for that matter.
But I think maybe we're being a bit unkind. I mean, I just look at Tedros. I mean, he's an upstanding Ethiopian. And then we have one of his recommendations, Mugabe. He's going to be the goodwill ambassador. So, I mean, they are a bunch of loonies, aren't they?
Oh, goodness me. It's a joke. And the World Health Organization is considered a joke in most instances, along with a lot of these other globalist bodies. I mean, they're either completely corrupt, or the people within them are corrupt, or they're basically doing the bidding of dictatorships like communist China. So that's what we see, pretty much on all levels with the World Health Organization. And so to put control of what should be our sovereign national health policy in the hands of an external body, and I don't care how much control we're talking about, any form of control.
What about the I'm just thinking the how far down the track we are. We hear all these different stories that we know 2024, I think it is going to be the crunch year Correct. For us. Yes, but what whereabouts are we at the moment, do you know?
So I think what you're alluding to, Mike, there were international health regulations, there still are actually, that there was proposal to change them. Now, that came out of the Biden administration, actually. And I've got news that I'm yet to verify, but it seems like a reliable source, that all of those proposed changes were voted down. Now, again, I have to verify that, but the World Health Assembly just occurred. And, there were a lot of people raising a ruckus, like myself and Senator Malcolm Roberts mm-hmm. and many others, about these proposed international health regulation changes. And this was happening right across the world, this ruckus. So I think that they thought we better not get ahead of ourselves. We can do this with the pandemic treaty rather than doing it now and creating a bit of a fuss. So there was concern that these health regulation changes would have handed the power to the Director General of the World Health Organization to basically declare in a country or a region a pandemic and basically start demanding the enactment of certain measures. Now, yes, it probably would always be up to a sovereign government to say we'll do that or not, but there would have been international pressure put to bear, including the fact that we were breaching our commitments under the international health regulations if we didn't do certain things. Mm. And those certain things could have been anything from lockdowns to forced vaccination. So that's what I'm talking about. These treaties and international health regulations that were proposed, that they really do undermine sovereignty. Technically, there might be the ability of the government of the day to say, no, we're not doing it. But practically, because of it's seen as a breach almost of international law. And there come certain issues after that, including the potential for, the United Nations, for instance, to say, well, we've got an embargo on you. We've got a strike of some instance against you, which would harm the country and harm the citizens of that country.
Now, to run which is in effect a world government, you need to have money. And of course, all those that have signed up to the World Health Organization in the fight against make-believe and maybe real pandemics have got to donate, provide some money to the WHO. The sums proposed are in tens of billions or more, aren't they?
Without a doubt. I mean, this is going to be another sting to the hip pockets of Australians at a time when we just can't afford it. Has anyone gone and actually had a look at the national debt level careering towards $1 trillion? Mm. So, you know, there's many reasons why we shouldn't do this pandemic treaty, because it's going to be, without a doubt, an undermining of Australian sovereignty. Combined with that, an undermining of individual sovereignty. And what I mean by that, Mike, is freedoms and rights. They are not going to be respected from someone calling the shots in Geneva. Mm. I can tell you that. And then that financial burden on the Australian public and the Australian taxpayer. There is no good reason to do this international pandemic treaty. And I say again, if we couldn't trust our state premiers and our prime minister to do the right thing by freedom and human rights and the Australian public when it came to pandemic measures, how in the bloody hell are we going to trust someone over in Geneva?
And the Patrick Henningsen the other day was talking about how this is the formation, you know, it's almost finished, of a world government. He said the IMF and WTO and I think the United Nations, all those are involved. Do you see, because we know what the Greens are like, we know what Labor is like. Do you see that, because the Greens are a Labor on steroids, but much more evil. Mm. They're like a bunch of Chuckies there on steroids. But do you see us moving faster than we should even, which we should never go that direction in anyway, but we're going to move so fast to becoming part of this new world order. I mean, first of all, how do we put the brakes on that? I mean, we can't really do a whole lot. You couldn't trust the Conservatives. You know, I know you were with them for a long part of your career. At the end, you weren't, but they signed off on all this garbage.
Yeah, that's true. So, look, you know, certainly the former Prime Minister had his hand up saying that he was going to be supportive of the treaty. He left some wriggle room about, we'll have to see the wording, but he basically said he was supportive of that treaty. Anthony Albanese gave a bit of a non-answer about it. I suspect, though, given the history of Labor governments signing over elements of Australian sovereignty to global bodies, we'll probably just see that again. The Greens, they're all up for these international bodies. The Greens run amok, actually, in a lot of the international forum, particularly around environment and climate change stuff. And that's half the reason why we end up with messy policies back in this country, because, you know, you get bureaucrats who say, oh, well, Prime Minister or Minister, you know, we've got our obligations under this international protocol or this international convention, and this is why we have to pass this law, or otherwise we're going to be in breach of it. And what you haven't found out is there was a bunch of green activists running around at that particular conference, global conference, that came up with that convention or that protocol. So the Greens are up to it to their eyeballs, so they'll support it. It will remain to be seen whether or not a changed leadership in the Liberal Party to Peter Dutton will stand up more to these sort of attacks on our sovereignty and freedom. I suspect that it will, but I also suspect there'll end up being a rift within the Liberal Party itself on these sort of matters. So that remains to be seen. The problem is, Mike, the Liberal Party's view on it, and even to a degree One Nation's view on it, is probably going to be moot, because my understanding as to where we're going with the Senate, that the bulk of control, the bulk of numbers, will be held by Labor and the Greens together. Mm. So, you know, this could just simply be rubber stamped by Labor and the Greens. And then the problem is, if a future government comes in, you know, like Donald Trump did in the US with the Paris Agreement, if a future government comes in and tries to roll it back, always in these treaties, there's booby traps to stop that from happening. You know, they have cooling clauses or cooling off clauses on exit, so that you can say you want to exit, but it'll take 4 or 5 years before you exit. And so they're hoping during that stage that you're going to be rolled as the government, the new government's going to come in and keep it. So they put all these little tricks in them. And that's why we shouldn't do it in the first place. You know, we don't elect people from Geneva. We don't elect the World Health Organization. Mm. We elect representatives. We send them down to Canberra. We send them to our state parliaments. And they're the ones who should be firmly in charge of our health policy, despite how badly they handled it over the last 2 years.
I'm just looking at the ALP because the there's the increase in energy prices, and which will keep going up and up and up and up. Now, Palaszczuk in Queensland, our favourite premier, she is going to make an allowance available, I think, of $175 or thereabouts to help with the increased in cost of living. It's not going to do a whole lot. And then you have Albanese. Of course, he's going to have to try and appease the natives of Australia, which is us, I mean, everybody, because the problem is his policies are going to push up prices of electricity even faster and more severe than they are at the moment. So tell me this. Yeah, you being a politician, and you've observed some weasels in the gallery. How do they get out of this one?
Oh, look, you know, I've already seen how they're getting out of this one. They're blaming it on the outgoing government. Oh, the government knew that there was something coming and they didn't do anything about it. Well, no, I can tell you why we're going to have rising cost of living, at least in relation to electricity, and that is because as soon as the Labor government got in, the price of carbon credits shot through the roof, and that's a very good signal that there is going to be increased prices for power generation. So that's what's coming down the road here, is increased prices, because all of those, you know, big investors, we're talking even some multinational companies that have got their fingers in the pie when it comes to carbon credits, they know that the changes coming from this Labor Greens government are going to mean they're going to make a lot of money, and that money is going to be made at the expense of the Australian public. Now, as for the sort of knee-jerk response of, you know, handing out free money to people to offset the cost of living, that is terrible policy, Mike, because terrible, terrible policy. It seems good. It's so popular because everyone loves getting a check in the mail, right? You know, if you've done nothing for it and you get $175 or whatever it might be, well, it's great. It's money for jam. But where does that money come from? Mm. It comes from spending, you know, printing more money. And that leads to one thing, inflation. That's what we are also dealing with here, because governments haven't gotten spending under control because they keep on doing, like, forms of quantitative easing and printing off more money. That is leading to price rises. We've also got global issues going on, and I can't quite understand it. I've seen a few theories out there, but I'm not going to delve into any of that as to why the price of food is going up. But what we do know is that it is going up, and this will be made all the worse by handing out free money. But that's always the sort of socialist way to just, how do we fix this problem that's caused by inflation? We'll print more money. We'll give it to people. And that'll cause more inflation. You know, it really is dumb. But I bet my bottom dollar the Federal Labor will do it as well.
Now, you've, okay, the first of all, I have to say I'm very disappointed in the election. I got to tell you,
I'm
surprised. I have to say I'm very surprised, but it does show you though that the narrative, which is basically from mainstream media, if they do it enough, like good advertising, you can convince anybody of anything. In fact, you can convince them to have a shot in their arm, not knowing what it is. That's how good it is. And so I think the media, I think legacy media did a wonderful hatchet job on the freedom parties, and very, very disappointing. And they'll do the same next time. They'll keep doing the same. How do you cut through the garbage?
You've asked a question that's difficult to answer. I mean, you're doing part of it at the moment with this radio station, TNT Radio. We have to try and prop up alternative forms of media to counter this this narrative. Because you're right. I mean, they called it the Seinfeld election, you know, the election about nothing. And, you know, you think that that's right, apart from the fact there was one burning issue that about 10% of the electorate or more, maybe, probably even upwards to 20%, were aggrieved about, and that was the vaccine mandates. Yep. You know, whether they were forced into getting that to keep their job or whether they had lost their job as a result, whether they'd been deprived of access to services and restaurants and all the rest of it. That, there are people who are really aggrieved about that, but they just called that an anti-vaxxer thing and then just didn't talk about it. I mean, I can tell you, I was a regular on Sky News until I started making these sort of comments as well about the mandates, and then I got taken off. And even when I got, you know, invited back on, the compere would say to me, hey, just ease up on the vaccine comments. We can't have too much of that on here. You know, so there was a consistent line across the corporate media. It didn't matter whether it was left-wing corporate media like the bloody Guardian or the Sydney Morning Herald or Nine News to conservative media like Sky News. They did not want to talk about the one big issue that would have dominated this election. And in doing so, they drowned it out. No, nothing was heard. That worked to the benefit of the left, because when you have an election about nothing, when the current government is just behaving like Labor Greens light, well, they're just going to go and vote for the real thing, because there's no other issue in town apart from the one that they're all talking about, climate change, which is also a nonsense. And
it is
really just a catalyst for more control and profiteering if you look into it, but that's another story.
So what do we see George Christensen doing now?
Well, Mike, I think that it's vitally important we get more information out there to the public. Mm-hmm. So I've launched I'm in the process of launching a daily newsletter. That's my focus at the moment is on that, nationfirst.substack.com. There's a shameless plug for it.
What was that? I didn't quite catch the address one more time.
nationfirst.substack.com. Or you can go to my website, georgechristensen.com.au, and sign up to it. Mm-hmm. That newsletter, I intend to be talking about all of these issues that the mainstream media don't talk about. They're the ones that you're talking about, Mike, but we need more players in this game out to more people. My newsletter goes out to a few hundred thousand people, actually.
That's pretty good.
So that rivals a lot of newspapers. So I'm going to keep on pushing that, and hopefully, you know, if combined, TNT Radio, Rebel News, The Good Source, Cauldron Pool, my newsletter, other people's work, if that gets to as many people as possible, we can start changing hearts and minds and perhaps even then change the government.
You know, I have to say, well, before, I'm way over time now, just quickly though, all what you've said is true, but it gets down though to, you know, because Australians, people say that we're relaxed and easygoing, blah, blah, which we are by nature. Others say it's more on the side of apathy. So we actually have to become a little more in tune with what's happening. Yeah. We can't be fence sitters or on the other side. We actually have to look further than our nose, don't we?
Correct. There is a bit of, she'll be right, and that is apathy. And there's also, there can be the other side of the coin, people that get so worried about things and they think, well, what can I do about it? There's nothing that I can do about, you know, the pandemic treaty. But I remind people there is something that can be done about it. I mean, these international health regulations were dropped. You know, everyone thought it was going to be fait accompli when the $10,000 cash ban came in. Mm-hmm. But the government of the day dropped it. And why was that? It was because of people power. So never underestimate it. But, you know, it will only be underestimated if Australians just say, oh, she'll be right, or oh, I can't do anything about it. I mean, when that happens, the would-be dictators, the tinpot dictators, they run amok. Mm. And they have run amok over the last 2 years. They'll probably be running amok over the next three.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't let it happen without any calling out of that sort of behaviour.
Yeah, I just think as we wind it up, I think our biggest problem will be the Greens, They're terrible, terrible creatures. This is where you want to live, in a place where cannibals roam free, because they'll eat their greens.
Well, mate, they're socialists, and that's what we should call them. They are socialists. They're environmentalists, or they're masquerading as environmentalists.
Yeah, they are.
Really, they're absolutely avowed socialists.
Okay, George, great chatting. Have a lovely weekend. The sun's going to shine, I believe. They tell us in Queensland the sun will be shining for the weekend.
Good.
So sausage on bread, maybe a rissole or two, and some onion, and a libation to follow. George Christensen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
This is TNT Radio.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
The United States government has declared you an enemy of the state. For the first time in history, a foreign journalist has been charged under the U.S. Espionage Act for publishing truthful information about war crimes. If convicted, our right to free press is over. We have been led to despise the journalist charged by a massive smear campaign directed at both the left and the right, yet his record speaks for itself.
He's the only journalist to have never gotten it wrong.
The charges are opposed by all major human rights and free press organizations, but our once trusted news outlets have failed to inform us. It is not too late. We can demand the UK stop the extradition of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. We can demand the Department of Justice drop the charges. Call UK Home Secretary Priti Patel at 020-7219-3528 or call the Department of Justice at 202-514-2000. They are not after him. They're after us.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Hello?
Yes, police, fire, or ambulance.
It's my friend. Help me, please.
Okay, look, I need you to stay on the phone. Just stay on the phone.
You're getting
blown away. Okay, now hang on. Oh.
Triple Zero's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. So please, stay on the line and you'll get help faster.
This is the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
Now, our country is taking a breather to see what will happen next with pandemics, moneypox, vaccine mandates, and the possibility of more restrictions. And I can see those masks on the horizon. Or is that just a dust storm? Alan Dana started flying in the UK in 1988 and now has accumulated 23,000 flight hours, recently fired after 14 years at Jetstar, the low-cost airline owned by Qantas. Now, the reason for termination, serious misconduct for not complying with the company vaccine mandate. Now, prior to this, he was flying for British Airways, based in London, Heathrow, operating to the Arctic Circle and Africa. Nice place to go. Africa, not the Arctic Circle, a bit cold for me, and the Middle East. Now, much of his training was completed outside of Chicago before working as an instructor and charter pilot in Palm Beach, Florida, before relocating and flying in the Caribbean. He holds the American FAA, British and Australian airline pilot licenses. Alan also holds an FAA Accident Prevention Counselor designation. Now, he's part of the group called the Magnificent Qantas 24. Now, that's a group of 24 airline staff who were brave enough to stand up for their workplace rights and freedom to choose. They recognised that the corporate mandates pushed by Qantas and Jetstar, aka Alan Joyce, were a clear breach of their employment contracts. All have been given a termination decision and stood down without pay until their upcoming court action delivers a verdict. An expected win in federal court will set a precedent for the entire country. A directions hearing, by the way, is scheduled for, actually has been, in fact, on the 16th of May 2022, which is about, a couple of days ago. I'm looking at my calendar. That would be about 11 days ago. First of all, Alan, am I right with the date? Am I wrong?
No, you're spot on, mate. Thanks for having me back on. Yeah, the directions hearing was heard, and our submission of claim is in, and now Qantas are taking the time allocated to prepare their defence for our statement of claim. So that's where we're at the moment. So we're just waiting for the clock to run out so we can see what Qantas' defence is going to be.
Yeah, Qantas always goes by not the logo, or by the hook, as the Australian airline. I didn't think Aussies acted this way, did they?
Well, you know, it seems that was that's a long lost era, and it's certainly lacking in recent times, and hopefully we'll be able to get there at some point in the future. But for right now, it's rather un-Australian, a lot of the stuff that's been going on and that we're all being subjected to. So our action is just one of the pieces on the chessboard, really. It's doing the best we can and standing up for what is absolutely right against something that we know is absolutely wrong.
You know, I've been flying for almost as old as Adam as a boy. Well, started off as a boy. I mean, I really have flown a lot with Qantas. I mean, other airlines too. And the days of I think it was James. Was it James Strong? He was right back he's actually probably before, you're probably in the States there, but anyway, James Strong had the respect of his staff, and just talking to a lot of Qantas people at the moment who love flying and they love the airline, inverted commas, they don't like what's happened to it. Have you heard similar things too?
Well, I think this just goes down to the corporate structure, really. I mean, it's not endemic to Qantas. It's large organisations that have been around for a long time. It's the middle level management that just kind of they just kind of get lost in their own importance, and you end up becoming this machine rather than a person. And this is what the mistake a lot of people make, is they attribute their friendships of people within an organization, they attribute that to the company, and the company is an impersonal thing. It's a money-making machine, and we are just assets at the end of the day. And as a lot of these staff that have been at Qantas and Jetstar and other airlines for 15, 20, 25, 30 years, let me look at Graham Hood, for 30 years at Qantas, they'll get rid of you at the drop of a hat. You know, as soon as you're done, they will drop you. And we all... You know, give companies the latitude and the free pass because of the personal relationships we make within those organizations. And that really is what leads us to sort of go that extra mile. You come in early, you know, when you're working, or come in on a day off to help out, and you know, because you're helping your mates, but you are helping the corporation, and it's not rewarded, and particularly when we're faced with something like we've been facing, it doesn't really reciprocate.
They talk about teamwork being important. I mean, in an aeroplane, teamwork is the ultimate, isn't it? And then you have
it certainly is.
And then you have the corporate side of things who don't follow that. I mean, Qantas took delivery of their first 380, I used to mouth it, what a great aircraft, but they used to refer to it, the crew, as the Hyundai of the sky. And it would, because plastic bits would fall off and here and there, but I mean, that crew is responsible not only for your comfort, it's responsible for your entire safety. And I don't understand why corporate wouldn't get involved in the safety of an airline, because we're talking about jabs here and stuff, and none of us know what's going to happen down the track, although Graham Hood did tell us some stories that there were a number of incidences with people not all that healthy after getting the shot, and with the paddles used to help them get through a condition of lying prostrate on a floor of an aircraft isn't a good sign of corporate management or safety, is it?
Well, that's it, and the thing is, it comes down to facts, and when you drill down to it, I mean, we're learning this now with the court case we've got coming up, you can only argue on the facts, and it's the establishment of what those facts are. And the thing is, in regards to the vaccines, we don't have any data, because there isn't any. because they're still experimental. And we keep getting into these arguments, you know, they're approved. Hang on a minute. These vaccines were developed by United States corporations in the United States. The Federal Drug Administration over there has only given them an emergency use authorization. Well, my question would be, if they're on an emergency use authorization because they haven't been approved by the country that developed them, how on earth can they be approved in Australia for the country that's just purchased them? Do you see? So the TGA here in Australia keep going on that they're provisionally approved. And then when you talk to anybody that's using the vaccines, they're calling them approved. And this is what the Civil Aviation Authority is doing here, the CASA, Civil Aviation Safety Authority, on their website. They say that these vaccines are approved. Now, that's incorrect, because if you go to the TGA website, it states very clearly that these vaccines are provisionally approved, which means that they may not reach full approval and could be withdrawn from the market. So there's a lot of misinformation out there in regards to the status of them, for one, and also what the adverse reactions are to those vaccines, and we just don't know. There isn't the data.
Graham was very adamant that he thought a commission should be set up into investigating CASA because of that very reason, that they are putting people's lives at risk, basically because they're supporting a experimental vaccine. And if you're a pilot, you can't do that. You can't even have a drink before you fly and stuff. So, and it's interesting that they have one set of rules, and then on the other side, they have another set of rules, and both will never meet in the middle. I mean, it's a very dangerous situation. And I do believe Graham was very sincere when he said they need to have a royal commission into CASA because it is placing people's lives at risk.
Well, I would be tending to agree with him, because the thing is, I think what the Civil Aviation Safety Authority are doing at the moment is they're just hiding behind the fact that they're not doing any screening, because they're taking the TGA's word for it that the vaccines are safe and effective. Well, somebody has to be responsible if they're found to be not safe and effective. Well, the only way that you can establish if they are safe and effective is to do some screening and do some testing post-vaccination. And they're not doing that. And our sort of organization, the Aussie Freedom Flyers, in conjunction with the Global Aviation Alliance, which is a new alliance of aircrew around the world, in conjunction with the US Freedom Flyers, are actually taking on the aviation regulators to encourage them to start a screening program for all aircrew, because we do know of aircrew that are suffering adverse reactions that are keeping quiet for fear that they will lose their flying certification. And that's a serious, serious situation. Now, there's a lot of pilots and a lot of people walking around in all of the cities across Australia that had no adverse reactions whatsoever. And that's great. But we do know of people that are suffering and people that are in charge of other people's lives, i.e. nurses and doctors, truck drivers, train drivers and pilots, that are suffering the effects of the vaccines and are not speaking up, because if they speak up, they'll lose their jobs.
Look, there's a story in the Epoch Times today about 18 major airlines which are suing the FAA and the Department of Transport by the US Freedom Flyers over COVID vaccine mandates. Can you tell us more about this and the significance?
Yeah, absolutely. The US Freedom Flyers was started by American Airlines pilot Josh Yoder. We're in direct contact with them on a weekly basis. And what they've done is that there is a regulation in the United States that the FAA is not allowed to have a pilot, is not allowed to have a drug in their system if it's been approved for less than 12 months. Now, that's one of their own regulations that they are not following. Now, the COVID vaccines are not even approved. Do you see? Because the COVID vaccines are on an emergency use authorization. And the FAA's rule is for approved drugs. So it says FAA, Food and Drug Administration, approved less than 12 months ago. The FAA generally requires at least 1 year of post-marketing experience with a new drug before consideration for aeromedical certification purposes. This observation period allows time for uncommon but aeromedically significant adverse effects to manifest themselves and be screened. Contact either your regional flight surgeon for guidance on specific applicants to request consideration for particular medications. So they've got a very strict rule about air crew who are in charge of passenger aeroplanes with drugs in their systems that have not been approved. And they have broken their own laws. So this is why the US Freedom Flyers, in conjunction with John Pierce Law, has filed the lawsuit. And they basically started with Atlas Air Cargo, which is a very large cargo airline. And they have a case. They absolutely have a case because it's been blatant. So they're pursuing that action. And the individuals in the FAA who have rubber stamped this and allowed crews to fly with unapproved medications need to face the music.
Will it help your case?
Well, it should, because it's going to get the attention of our regulators here, and it should get the attention of our regulators here because they're asleep on the job. They know that we know of aircrew in Australia flying today that are suffering effects. Now, not every pilot is going to suffer effects. And the thing is, we could be labelled as anti-vaxxers, as they always come out with. Which is a non-argument. They could say that we're disgruntled because we've been fired. Again, it's not an argument. If there are people up there in the air that are suffering effects, wouldn't you want to know about it? And if you want to know, the only way to find out is to do a screening test. And the screening that has been recommended by the medics and doctors that we have spoken to is they should immediately conduct cardiac MRIs on all aircrew. They should also do the D-dimer test, which is the blood clotting factor that can cause blood clots. And they should also do the troponin levels, which is when the heart produces a protein when it's under stress. And these are easy tests to do. And it would expose the air crews that have actually got symptoms that they may or may not be aware of. And I think, you know, when you're talking about aeroplanes that can carry 200-300 people, that's a really important thing to know.
Makes it even more challenging in the US with the ongoing concerns with 5G. Just adds another dimension to your landing. And it's never good to land in someone's backyard, is it? Because that's what's...
This is one of the things why aviation should be taken really, really seriously, is because when you're dealing with doctors, at least doctors only kill one patient at a time. When pilots make a mistake, we kill people by the hundreds. And luckily, you know, we've got a very, very safe aviation community in Australia, one of the safest in the world, and we want to keep it that way. We don't just give unapproved drugs to aircrew and just say, she'll be all right, mate, which is seems to be the attitude that the Civil Aviation Authority is taking here. And it's not right. You know, it's really, really a cavalier attitude that they're taking, and they could quite easily establish whether or not these vaccines are actually having an unintended consequences on the crews that are in the air today. And they need to do a screening program immediately.
Yep. Look, my guest is Alan Dana, part of the magnificent Qantas 24. Back in a tick, this is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The latest series of primaries did not go entirely to plan for former President Donald Trump, but the victory of his former White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders in her bid to become governor of Arkansas was significant. Running against challenger Doc Washburn, she received a massive 83% of the vote. Importantly, Sarah Huckabee Sanders campaigned to fight back against the radical environmental policies like the Green New Deal that threatens to destroy so many jobs. In general, she stood for a typical conservative platform fighting for freedoms. But to be fair, so did her opponent, Doc Washburn, a passionate opponent of vaccine mandates. He also campaigned on an important point that Walmart has been running the state, and when the governor, Hutchinson, imposed a lockdown, which drove a lot of small businesses out of business, it didn't touch Walmart or the other big buck stores. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Hello.
Hiya.
So, what are we going to do with your hair today?
Oh, well, just a trim, thanks. You know, maybe an inch or two off, nothing fancy.
Okay, great.
Whatever you're doing, it's important to use the right tools for the job. So if you want to quit smoking, pick up a new and improved Quick Kit free from a local pharmacy. To find your nearest, text FREE and your postcode to 88088 or visit smokefree.nhs.uk. England only, £2 household while stocks last. Standard network charges apply.
This is the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
My guest is Alan Dana, part of the group called the Magnificent Qantas 24. Alan, just before we get into other serious things, full marks, though, to Qantas. I mean, they are truly the best Scotch pourers God ever created. I mean, I've never seen a little Scotch yet, so they've done a wonderful job for the passengers. Hopefully the pilots aren't sampling along the way.
Oh, well, I flew for Air France a long time ago, and they used to give us, in the meals in flight for the crew on the flight deck, we actually used to get given a bottle of wine with each meal.
That's terrible. Don't tell me that.
So those were the days. Those were the days. I didn't drink it. I can rest assured. I used to put them in my flight case and take them home, but... I had a very, very large cupboard with lots of these very, very nice French wines.
Oh, that's fantastic. And only the best wine too, I would imagine.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was the business class meals were the same that they used to serve on Concorde, so it wouldn't have been anything that was cask wine, so to speak.
You know, I could talk to you for hours about flying, but, you know, on all the fun bits, but we haven't got a whole lot of time here. What's the current situation with vaccine mandates applying to pilots in other countries?
It's not as stringent as it is here in Australia, mainly because there's a lot more competition and there's hardly any competition here. I mean, you've got three companies, really. Two if you put Jetstar and Qantas obviously together. So, I've got colleagues that are captains at Finnair in Finland, flying around the world unvaccinated. I've got colleagues at Air France who are unvaccinated. Colleagues that are flying for Virgin Atlantic out of London, they're unvaccinated, and also British Airways. And currently now, British Airways, there's no vaccine requirements for certain countries that you can travel to, and also the mask mandates are also gone on international long-haul and short-haul flights. So it's a very disjointed situation around the globe and completely different everywhere. You know, and the last time I checked, the COVID infection is the same brand globally, but the reactions to it nationally and on a state basis as well are just so disjointed. None of it makes any sense.
It must be distressing. You're a very intelligent person, great responsibilities. It must distress you to think, one, first of all, we've got these idiots running around applying mandates, but two, they're questioning your dedication and your professionalism to flying, aren't they?
Well, basically they are, and it is very disappointing that they've taken, you know, the sky is falling sort of attitude, you know, the Chicken Little. It's just like just panic stations, you know, for something that I've had twice now and it's just a bad flu. It was no big deal. And it looks like now, from the data that's coming out from the TGA's own data source, that there's more risk in the vaccines than there is from actually catching COVID, and which is what I thought right from the beginning, which is why I was not prepared to take the risk of the vaccine, and I would rather take the risk of catching COVID, which I have twice, and I've recovered quite nicely. Mm. Thank you very much.
Yeah, same here. I've actually had it once, got onto the ivermectin and stuff like that, which we can say because they can't take our license off us. But it works well. Early treatment, you know, again, being sensible and smart about it. If you get sick, get early treatment. It works.
Well, that's what the doctors were saying. You know, this is probably the only condition that you can face medically where the medical establishment do not recommend early treatment. Mm. It's just like what Are they taking their own drugs? Hmm. I mean, what planet are these people on? You've got to do early treatment for any affliction that you might face in life. And this is the only one that they haven't actually done that. They just want you to get sick, come into a hospital, and then have a go at saving your life and get these vaccine into you. It just doesn't make sense to me.
We spoke to Dr. Ryan Cole yesterday, and he said it's a bit like going to a doctor with a broken leg, your bone sticking out of the leg. The doctor says, go home until gangrene sets in. It's the same thing. And I thought, well, that's actually a very good analogy there. You mentioned about the pilots. Yeah, you know, a lot of airlines now, you don't have to be jabbed. What about the situation with passengers? I know it's a little more complex because to say fly into the US, I've got to be double vaxxed and I'm not, so I can't fly to the US just yet. There are countries though, aren't there, that you don't need to have to be vaccinated.
That's correct, and the list is changing all the time, and the requirements are changing all the time in various places. So it is an absolute minefield if you want to go anywhere. From what I know, I mean, I haven't been out of the country in 2 years myself. From what I can tell, you can leave Australia no problem, and then coming back in. I just literally got off the phone before I got on air with you to the Queensland Government Health helpline about COVID. And asked them, can you come back into Queensland unvaccinated? And the answer was, at the moment, yes. That's without quarantine. Looking at WA, it looks like the quarantine requirement is 7 days. And there's no test requirement pre-departure from the country that you're in. So you have to be an Aussie citizen or permanent resident coming home. And you can come in, and then you've got to do a RAT test within 24 hours of your arrival.
Which don't work anyway.
Exactly. They're very, very unreliable. So the whole thing is a nonsense. The best website, if anybody wants to check this stuff out, is emirates.com. You go on their website and look at the countries. They've got all the countries listed, and they've got the whole bunch of requirements on the different tabs. And then it just basically gives you the runaround, because if you are unvaccinated, it's very, very difficult to work out the different state requirements. So they don't make it easy. They're just looking here at the Queensland one. It's just saying, you know, if you've been outside Australia in the 7 days before arriving in Queensland, you are entering Queensland from overseas. As long as you follow the Australian government's eligibility requirements, you do not need to quarantine. As long as you have no COVID symptoms, you test negative within 24 hours, and you do not visit any vulnerable settings. But it doesn't explicitly say you do not need to be vaccinated. You have to call them up. And the trouble is, if you phone them up, you haven't got anything in writing that you can point to at a later date. So they don't make it easy. But you, at the moment, it looks like you can get in and out without quarantine unvaccinated, which is a good thing.
I suggest that with a fly Qantas to make sure they indulge in a whiskey or two, that'll kill just about everything.
Qantas internationally at the moment still have a requirement that you've got to be vaccinated, but Emirates and Qatar, internationally you have to be vaccinated to get on board their aircraft.
But that's nuts.
Yeah. And domestically you don't have to be. So you can catch a flight, say from Cairns to Sydney, unvaccinated, but you can't get on a flight from Sydney to Singapore unless you're vaccinated.
Wow.
Now you can get on an Emirates airplane and go all the way to London and back. Mm-hmm. Unvaccinated. So which one would you choose?
Well, as close to the pointy end as possible. Not that I like being spoiled, but that hasn't happened for a long time. I've got to pay for my own tickets now, or I used to anyway.
Yeah.
Just as we're running out of time, why do you think Australia's taken the stand it has?
Oh, my goodness. It does seem rather draconian. Compared with other countries in the UK now, there's no restrictions whatsoever, like nothing. You don't have to, there's no QR codes, there's no scanning, there's no masks anywhere on public transport, international travel. And it's almost back to normal, if you can say what normal is. In the United States, Florida and Texas, again, no restrictions there. So it just doesn't make sense. And my personal feeling is I think we're probably going to be running into more restrictions now that the election's over.
I see that you Spent a lot of time in Palm Beach. I used to hang out at West Palm Beach for a little while, and then went over.
Yes.
Then went over to Panama City towards Pensacola,
yep.
And I mean, truly, a very interesting part of the world. Big men with very big boots and usually overweight, and love their drinking.
Yes.
Just quickly, yes. What do you think will happen if we get another pandemic scare? You know, there's moneypox on the horizon, and you've got also avian bird flu is floating around. Do you think we'll go back to square one?
Well, I think they might try. I would hope that more Aussies now just sort of don't follow the rules. I mean, that's the best way, really. I mean, how serious, really? I mean, it was serious COVID for a lot of people that were in the vulnerable group, as we well know. But on the whole, for the rest of us, it was an inconvenience. But the government's response was more of an inconvenience and more detrimental to more people than COVID would have been on its own. Mm. So I think if there is another scare of any sort, I think people should be able to see through the nonsense now and make up their own minds and just not follow what the government are telling us, because they never seem to get anything right.
They don't. Now, we're run out of time. Alan Dana, thank you very much for your time. I'll have a scotch tonight, close my eyes and think that I'm back on Qantas. Thank you very much. This is TNT Radio.